He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Okay, good morning, everybody, for this week's Car Keys with Jada Markin, Mike Flint, and Robin Leach. I think we want to start this show off with discussing a couple of things that are going on in the Northeast. We've had some stormy weather, and it brings back discussions in my head, and Jay can chime in any time, about driving during conditions of vicious winds and heavy rain. The news broadcast that I watched the evening of this storm had also interesting discussion about how you should be driving in such weather. The vicious winds, which hit this area rather less strongly than I think hit elsewhere the night before this show came on the air, is really troublesome with trees that are hanging over the road. And this is where drivers really need to pay attention if they can possibly think about doing so, because you have blinding rain in many cases, along with vicious wind going on as you are motoring down the road. Speed is also very important to control, because when you get heavy, heavy rain alongside the wind, of course, but heavy rain, the roads turn into more than just wet pavement in many places, depending on the road surface, depending on the road gradient, depending on the road, the surface conditions. And one of the conditions that you want to watch out for is pooling conditions, where you can have aquaplaning going on in your tires. And we've talked about having a very good tire condition for storms like this, because you want to have deep tire treads. If you don't, you might aquaplane, and that's like skating on ice, or I should say floating along the water, where you have no traction, especially if you're in a turning area on a road or on a hill. Well, you won't have pooling on a hill because the water will be draining off it, but on flat road surfaces, on curves, you can be going, if you're going too fast, you have very poor tread wear left on your tires, the tires won't have grip on the pavement. As far as the wind goes, I was watching a lot of fairly violent tree waving as I was driving in the daytime, when the winds were picking up before the actual rains came. And this also was the day before this show was recorded. And I'm really concerned about some of the trees that look like they're dead, because if they're dead in the trunk line, they could be dead in their limbs. And that's when the limbs break off and crash to the ground. And you're not going to be able to do much about it if you see it falling as you're approaching it at speed. You're also probably not going to be able to do much about avoiding it if it happens to be coming down as you've arrived at the point of it, impact on the ground, because you will be the point of impact. But in any event, with these increasing storm conditions occurring in our listing area, as well as beyond, way beyond in many cases, it pays to be either off the road completely or going at a sane speed, which may well be below the posted speed limit capability, so that you can be ready for good ability to maneuver if you have the eyesight and foresight to do it, or the need to stop and you are not aquaplaning. Jay, any comment?
I think you've pretty much said it all, but you know, I can just recall a personal experience a few years ago, when we had these terrible flood flashes, and I was driving into New York City, and there it was more about the amount of water on the roads than the wind and the falling debris. But it's to your point, you know, if weather conditions are not good, whether it's snow, sleet, wind, you know, try to minimize the time you spend on the road. But yeah, a lot of limbs on the trees, on the roads. I just flash my lights if I see something on the side of the road and cars coming at me. Try to give people some warning. And that's about it.
If it happens to be nighttime, it's worse if their limbs already fallen on the road, because If you have cars coming at you, you may have your low beams on. They may or may not have seen the limbs and able to flash you, as Jay just said he does, alerting you, the oncoming traffic, to a possible problem on the roads that may not be visible in your headlights. If your headlights are on bright, or if it's, this also would occur if the weather were very foggy and you didn't have good visibility too far ahead of you in thick fog conditions. But in night conditions, it's a blackout situation. And if it's raining, it's even worse because your wipers are working, your windshield is obscured by raindrops in between the wipes. And all of a sudden, there's a huge limb in the road that you didn't see. And you have to come to a quick stop or otherwise evade it by going around it if you can do so safely. I guess that's about it, unless there's any further stuff from Jay or Mike on that front.
I think we can move on.
Okay, moving on. It is April when this show is done, and it is
April.
New York Automotive Show coming up in the late part of the month. I'm planning on going. Jay, I don't know whether you can go as well. I think it's between the 22nd and 28th at in New York City. We'll see what the auto show. I have missed it for the last couple of seasons because I wasn't very interested in going to see all the electric cars. A couple of other friends are going with me this year, and we've decided we're going to go and
I have
see
not
what.
gotten the invite yet.
That's true, but in any event, maybe you will. And
Well, and
I don't know whether
for
it's good,
I'll
the
hold my
preponderance
breath.
of electric car vehicles is going to be at the show, or whether or not we're going to see, new ideas in fossil fuel vehicles showing up as well.
Yeah, and we
I hope it's
want
well attended by the manufacturers, but a couple of the other shows around the country have been, I think, less well attended by some participants, normal participants, as you'd like to see. We've got a couple of new vehicle lines which I would like to see there. One is the Grenadier, which is an off-road vehicle, very much like the Mercedes Range Rover, heavy-duty Range Rovers and the like. Just to see them up close. I have yet to see one really up close. I've talked to a couple of owners. It's a very tough-looking off-road capable vehicle, like a Jeep, a Wrangler, well, more so than that. And
Yes.
maybe the Lucid will have a place. That's an electric car, of course, which I just said I'd like to see less of. And whatever else they want to put forth. The Corvette might have a display because they've got some particularly interesting models which might be interesting to see on the floor of the Coliseum in New York. But there'll be more on this show if I actually get there.
Well, I actually think I will go because I'll be returning from Europe, I think, before the show ends. So I will go on one of the last days
We
when
usually
people.
go on a Wednesday, so that's in the last week, so that maybe you'll be able to go with that group.
Is that an invitation?
Yes.
Well, thank you.
For our public issued there.
So I what I would be looking for at the show, obviously, any new cars, but we're looking at trends. And yes, we're going, as we know, more and more towards electric vehicles, and we may or may not like them, but they're coming. Interestingly, I was reading about Mercedes's new, I forget what they call it, platform. It's a new chassis slash platform for their new range of electric vehicles, and the first one that will come out will be later this year. Will be the CLA Mercedes, which is a small, very rounded sedan. It's their smallest sedan. But interestingly, it will come out. It looks more like a classic ICE vehicle, but it will be fully electric. But eventually, they will put a gasoline engine in the car and have a hybrid version of it. So it looks like the European manufacturers are not quite sure they want to go fully electric or not, and they're backtracking a little bit. And one of the avenues they're pursuing is having platforms that can be both electric and ICE powered vehicles. And I believe BMW has this type of platform with their new 7 Series already. You can get it as full electric or as a gasoline powered car. And it's basically the same chassis, the same platform. So I thought that's a pretty interesting trend in the industry. Mercedes is also going to drop their EQS moniker. So, they're trying to blend the vehicle lineup and not having, you know, an all electric, an all gas, and tiptoeing between the two. It's just like one model range and with more seamless variations or differences between the electric and the gas powered lines, if you will.
Given that, I think that makes it harder to figure out when the ads come on the TV for these lines, whether you are actually seeing electric vehicles as part of as the emphasis of the ad or ICE combustion engines. BMW, I think, is doing the same thing as Mercedes. Jay, I saw an ad the other day over the weekend on BMWs and the BMW X5 or M5 or something 5 and the 6s were going down the road. And I think they're both available in electric or ICE ranges. So that may be what Audi is doing and maybe what the U.S. manufacturers to do, because trying to figure out all those different monikers on the vehicles and on the for looking at what you want to go when you go into a dealer is very confusing right now.
Well, should actually help bring the cost of the electrics down. It makes sense. If they would do that with charging stations now, have a plan. You know, so we got the auto companies starting to see how to truly manufacture for economic reasons. Now we need the charging things to do the same.
Well, we need them to be energy providers, right? Whether it is gasoline, fuel, food for the drivers, or electric power for electric vehicles, power stations or refueling stations, if you will, should encompass all forms of energy. You know, I still wonder to this day why we always have a roof over gas stations. And charging stations are left out in the air like the gas stations of the 1920s were. But I think that is changing. I've had the opportunity to see some marketing drawings and plans from some of the energy providers. And this is a fuel company. The model, the design of charging stations is going to evolve, I think, pretty quickly, but it's going to become much more integrated and offer full range of services, even though people are going to spend less time in charging stations. I think this new Mercedes platform, for instance, in the CLA, first of all, the range is a jump up to 475 to 495 mile range.
Which is a big jump.
That's a big jump, and that's actually more than most gas-powered cars.
Many.
Yeah.
I agree.
And so now you're getting the range to, have improved quite a bit. But I also think, if I recall correctly, this is also the powertrain that will have. You will be able to recharge. I think it's. 200 miles within 10 or 12 minutes. And I read this over the weekend, and I'm not quite sure of the numbers, but it was pretty impressive.
Well, so, this is definitely dependent on the charging stations being able to put that output of that capability for that to be universally available around the country, as opposed to in only specific areas.
Well, I think too. Jay mentioned earlier about the gas providers, the gas companies, and all. It makes sense to roll this together and let the energy companies roll out the electric chargers and the hybrid station, if you will, as opposed to setting these electric chargers out in the middle of nowhere or just randomly wherever somebody feels like they want to put one. I know people would say they don't like that because you know big energy companies, but they've already got the layouts. They've got everything there. We should be encouraging them to start making that hybrid gas station that services both the electric and the gasoline powered.
Mike, I see one basic problem with that, and that is space on those station points for those to be able to be located in convenient spots within those stations.
Well, that all depends,
so hard,
though.
It's not so hard to do it at the big truck stops that have a lot, sort of acres of areas for the pumps to be and possibly the charging stations to be, but you're certainly not going to see those available in Sharon, Connecticut,
at
the Shell station or mobile station in Lakeville.
There
isn't any space.
In the smaller platforms, small towns, it's always a problem in the small towns. But if you look at gas stations in general outside of small towns, they've gotten huge on their lots now. On that lot than they had. Well, but there's a starting point. And, you create the hybrid station. Naturally, there's going to be a way. Trust me, if they're going to make income out of this, they'll find a way to make all these footprints work.
Correct.
It only makes sense to let the energy companies handle this.
Okay, that's a good idea. We'll watch it unroll. But I think it's going to be a few years before you see numerically in main lanes of travel. Well, they'll surface more quickly in the main lines of travel than they will in the outer lines of travel, which is obviously the smaller villages and country roads of the country. But that's fine. That's where most of the people probably with the charging needs that we're talking about, the fast charging needs, will find it convenient to be able to have an electric car or a gasoline car and not worry about range anxiety and the capability of getting back on the road in the, as Jay said, 10 to 15 minute time frame, as opposed to what I would guess is maybe 20 to 30 minutes to get the 200 miles more. But that's all coming with improved batteries. And I guess there's something called a solid state battery coming in the maybe 2030 and beyond area that may supplant the current lithium battery structure or whatever is not solid state that's now the prevalent battery used in all the cars. That we have all those things coming forward as we move forward through this decade.
So I'm jumping from one thing to another. I stumbled upon Costco's auto program site for electric vehicles.
Yes, and their programs. That's right.
And they have a program for EV incentives and all about EV. And it's pretty, I've only just taken a quick look at it, but it's pretty well done and explains things pretty straightforward.
Really?
All about the vehicles, the charging stations, and the tax credits. And I'm reading it as I'm speaking here, quickly scrolling down the page. The different types of EV chargers, connection ports, installation at home. It seems pretty well done. It also is very closely associated with GM products. I think they must have if not an exclusive deal, certainly a privileged relationship with General Motors, which also made me stumble upon the new Chevy BrightDrop delivery vans. And it's another one of those delivery vans that looks kind of weird, just a big box on wheels with a huge windshield where everything is all about, what we call last mile delivery. So, the market is obviously the UPSs, the FedExes, and the Amazons of this world. And all these, delivery electric vehicles don't have all that much of a range, or you're looking at 100 to 175 mile range. But that's plenty enough to do what their intended use is, and which, by the way, the USPS should have all electric vehicles to replace these little shoe boxes we've seen for the last 40 years on the roads.
USDS or USPS?
U.S.
Postal Service, right? Yeah.
But who knows what's going to happen with that?
Okay, let me switch topics because I think I don't remember whether we've already discussed this on a recent show, but you, Jay, and I were talking about cars that have reappeared on streets post-COVID era that I noticed had disappeared. And the two that came to mind were the Fiat Cinquecento or 500 gasoline version. There is a Fiat electric version currently on sale in the U.S. now. It's a small car. It's a commuter car. And then the Mercedes version of what was the Mercedes built other micro car?
The Smart.
The Smart. Yeah, the Smart 4.2 or whatever.
Yeah.
I've noticed that there are drivers running around our roads in these cars again. And I they stick out noticeably because I hadn't really noticed that I had seen any over the past few years until I think this last summer in 2024 and coming into 2025. And I don't know whether they just sat in garages and weren't used or what, but it's interesting because the Fiat 500 ICE is not available in the two-door version anymore and hasn't been for a couple of years, I think. And neither has the Smart 4.2 been available, I think, over the last two or three years in new versions.
The Smart for Smart does not exist anymore.
That's well, in factory, Europe, there seem to be a lot of them, though.
The Smart, yeah, I agree with you. The Smart factory was sold by Mercedes-Benz to Grenadier.
Grenadier, right? Interesting.
It's built. Yeah, it's very interesting because, and I've done some reading. I did, and we talked about it, I think, briefly a couple of years ago. That whole industrial complex is very interesting because you have the main factory owned by now Grenadier, but it used to be, you know, when they were producing Smarts, it was Mercedes. And then you have a bunch of independent suppliers, people who provide the plastics, the wheels, the seats, you know, whatever, all the specialized components that come into a car. All these suppliers were and are still located around that main factory, but not necessarily owned by now Grenadier. So it's an interesting concept, and it seems to work, you know, to close the loop on the Grenadier.
My purpose in commenting on these two particular cars was that they were, when they first showed up on the streets, they were also highlighted as being very good cars for urban areas because you could park, well, technically, yes, you could probably park two or three of either of those cars in the smallest versions in the same size parking area as one limousine style type of car.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you know, when I go down into the city, I see more Cadillac Escalade SUVs,
limousines,
little cars. I'm going on a tangent now. Also, I don't know if it's just me, and I don't know if you've had if you've been in the city recently driving, but it seems awfully quick. But I do seem to notice that there is less traffic downtown.
Well, have you been driving in the congestion restricted zones?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And you think it's worthwhile keeping?
Absolutely.
Because it's a big political football going on in the New York state of New York and New Jersey right now.
I even if the results weren't showing immediately, I would be a big partisan of it. But I think there are less people in the city, unless I'm just happen to go in the city on days. I mean, I don't go all that often, but I've gone, I would say, three or four times since congestion pricing has been in effect.
Does the Easy Pass automatically work in each congestion zone as being charged?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Now,
we'll find out when we go to the auto show.
Are they having more people on the public transportation than coming into the city, or just people aren't coming in at all?
Mike, I would not know because I do not take public transportation in the city. And people look at me and frown upon my position on that, but that's just the case. So no, I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, from what I've seen, I wouldn't take it either. So, but anyway, I'm just curious as to whether this thing's only effective if you keep people coming into the city, which means you're just trying to flip them from the road onto the public transportation. So if they're not coming in at all because of it, then you have failed in what you're doing.
Well, Mike,
no, not really.
This doesn't surprise me coming from you. And I think that the politics of it are way out of line with what I think the convenient alternative.
Well, what I said has nothing to do with politics. It's called business.
Well, yes, but the people who are against it say that business is being hurt because not as many people are coming to the stores.
Well, that's
and
the
we
point.
Don't really
yes.
know whether that's true or not.
Yes, that's the point. That's the point. If you don't have the people still coming into the city, it's an economic hurt, and that has not a damn thing to do with politics.
Okay. let's know, Jay. Anything new? You going back to Europe?
This past week, and I for work reasons, I was down in the southern part of the state again, and I may have mentioned this a couple of months ago. And I did I was part of an event in a specialized Porsche shop, and it's tucked away in some not shady neighborhood, but you know, it's not on the main street, on whatever the main street in Greenwich is, probably Greenwich Avenue, or New Canaan.
Route one is the main
Route
street
one.
Through there.
Well, actually, it may be, but it's near Bridgeport, and it's just amazing to see the cars that were in there. It's absolutely fabulous, but more to the point, I guess, was the fact that we still have very good specialized auto shops in our area. And I just think of the difference in experience when you go to a small local shop versus going to a big modern dealership. Every time I go into a dealership and you're sitting in the waiting room and then you see the service rep coming up, you feel like you're in a hospital waiting for the results of a biopsy. And inevitably, they tell you need a brake job or something else that's going to cost $1,200. And I just think that even with modern tech cars, I'm amazed at how these little shops
survive.
Still have qualified people working there and people who are passionate about cars. And they will work on brand new vehicles and they will work on antiques. And I don't need to name them. We know who they are. They're in the different towns, and there are several of them in each one of the towns in this area. And
there are. You know, there's a place right here between Lakeville and Salisbury down that the street by the new firehouse. I think that's very specialized in.
true. And now, you know, my experiences over the past weekend was more, reflecting on specialized independent repair shops, if you will. In general, and we have plenty of them here. And I know people who just bring their cars to dealerships and who are on, including you, right, Robin, who are on. And I'm not
to the point saying. To that point, Jay. Yeah, I have an address for one for my Jaguar because, of course, that's an old vehicle, and the new Jaguar dealers, I don't think have the capability of having mechanics that can work on the older cars. But all places like Autosport and Sharon, for example, have good mechanics. But I'm going to have to travel to go to the Jaguar place. But who I'm talking about had a Jaguar XJR, and I don't think he has it anymore because I don't see it parked out in front of his house. But he went to the same place. So those of us who have these specialized cars may seek out these specialized places more often than trying to go to the original dealerships that sold them back when they were first produced.
And then, having said all that, it's time for us
we
to drive out on out of here.
Okay, so until next week, we are Car Keys with Jay, Mike, and Robin.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.